Good morning. Good to be back with you. And we start off talking about this strange transition from summer into winter. What is the deal here? We have a couple of weather situations we want to bring to your attention, and we'll talk more about this during the course of the broadcast. First off, for those of you in the immediate Charlotte area, so hang on with me because this covers everybody. So just be patient because we have a wide area to cover. There is a flash flood watch in effect. It starts at noon today, and it will stay in effect until Thursday, tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. Here's what it covers. Portions of northeast Georgia, North Carolina, upstate South Carolina, including the following areas, and it goes through this list of the counties that are actually affected by this. Here are the areas in, it's pretty much all of western North Carolina, central North Carolina, and the upstate of South Carolina. Let's just sum it up that way. It'll make it easier to grasp this. Again, flash flood watch. It's in effect from noon today until 7 p.m. tomorrow. Here's what we're expecting. Heavy rainfall. Locations have already received 2 to 4 inches of rain on Monday. The ground is still saturated. And here's the problem. We're expecting more rain. And this could cause some serious problems with these rounds of heavy rainfall today and into Thursday. So you need to be aware of that. The other advisory, and this is why I was talking about the transition into winter instead of into fall. There's actually a winter storm warning that will go into effect this evening. This covers, listen very carefully here, covers several western North Carolina counties starting at 7 o'clock. And there's the possibility of some freezing rain and sleet in parts of the area, including northern Greenville County, from overnight into Thursday. So there's a winter weather advisory in effect at 7 p.m. for northern Greenville County. So we've got everybody covered. So just to sum this up again, concern about flash flooding, that covers pretty much the entire area within the sound of my voice from noon today until 7 p.m. tomorrow. Then we have a winter weather advisory for Greenville County. Starts at 7 p.m., possibility of freezing rain and sleet in parts of the area. And add to that, winter storm warning going into effect in western North Carolina. That starts at 7 p.m. So be aware. Have we covered everybody and thoroughly scared everybody to death? Just kidding. We'll talk about this a little bit later on as well and give you any updates. I want to start with something vitally important because it's something, honestly, we don't have a lot of conversation about. I think we hear these nebulous conversations about beefing up our military. How many times do you guys hear that phrase? You know, we need to beef up. What does that really mean? And what is the point behind this? Now, we've also had the conversation about the fact that we are probably overextended. We're probably putting our resources in places where we should consider letting some countries in certain parts of the world take on the burden for their own security. There's a study that's been conducted by the National Defense Strategy Commission. Now, this was made up of former top Republican and Democratic officials selected by Congress, and they evaluated the Trump administration's 2018 National Defense Strategy. The idea was to bring about a vast reshaping of the U.S. military to compete with Beijing and Moscow. Make no mistake about it. These two countries pose a significant threat to the United States of America. I believe two things are going on here. One of them is the military threat. The other is the threat of what I would refer to as subversion. I need to, recall the audio that I shared with you some time ago about the goal of the old Soviet Union to undermine the United States of America from within. In fact, I'm going to try to track that down during the break to share that with you, because I think that's vitally important to understand. You know, it's just like the radical Islamic movement. They're working on two fronts. It's not just terrorism. It's also subversion to bring about the collapse of our system from within. Well, here's the conclusion of this commission. We've lost our military edge to a dangerous degree. And there's the risk we could potentially lose a war against China or Russia. Now, some of you may be wondering, well, wait a second here. Why would we be concerned about a war with either of these countries? Well, we'll learn more about the whys and wherefores here. This commission has warned that Washington is not moving fast enough or investing sufficiently to put the vision into practice, risking a further erosion of American military dominance that could become a national security emergency. At the same time, according to this commission, China and Russia are seeking dominance in their regions, and the ability to project military power globally as their authoritarian governments pursue defense buildups aims squarely at the United States. And here's the concern they have, a strong fear of complacency. People have become so used to the United States achieving what is, you know, what we want in the world, including militarily, that we're kind of ignoring these warning signs that are out there. I mean, how easy is it for us to feel this way? We've been dominant for a long time. Who in the world is going to, in any way, become stronger and more dominant than the United States of America? Members of this commission have sketched a bleak vision. And I think it is interesting that it's not just Republicans, but also Democrats on this commission sharing this view. We've had dominance for decades. And I think part of this passivity that's set in, we've watched the fall of the Soviet Union, and a lot of people are thinking, you know, what's the big deal? Soviet Union's gone. What do we have to worry about? That has lulled too many people into a false sense of security. Can I also clarify something? There are some people who are committed to, and they would characterize themselves as being focused entirely on peace and want to make sure the war machine doesn't get kicked up. I think Ronald Reagan had it right, that we have to pursue peace through strength so we don't have a military conflict. That's the goal. We're going to talk more about this, and I want to get your thoughts on what we need to do at this point to maintain dominance, and how important is that? Back in the Vince Coakley radio program, and coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to have a more extensive report on what's going on with the weather. It's crazy. Flash flooding threats, also the possibility of winter conditions, as in ice in certain areas. We'll talk about it with our meteorologist in just a few minutes. I want to tell you about a developing story this morning before we continue in talking about what's going on with our defense. The Justice Department, a few minutes ago, has issued a defense of President Donald Trump's controversial appointment of Matt Whitaker as acting attorney general. There are people who have made the accusation this appointment is unconstitutional. Now there's a memo that has been issued by the Department of Justice Office of Legal Counsel. Here's what it says. It basically affirms a robust legal justification for Whitaker's right to lead the Justice Department, which includes the oversight authority over Special Counsel Robert Mueller. This is a 20-page memo addressed to the White House from the Office of Legal Counsel. And it concludes Whitaker's appointment is consistent with the plain terms of the Vacancies Reform Act because he had been serving in the Department of Justice at a sufficiently senior pay level for over a year as the statute requires. It goes on. Whitaker is only serving on a temporary basis, so he wasn't required to be confirmed by the Senate ahead of his election next week. Even though a separate statute exists that provides a succession plan at the Justice Department, the president can choose someone else consistent with the Vacancies Act. A senior Justice Department official said, prior to Jeff Sessions' firing, the White House requested oral advice on whether the president could designate a senior DOJ official to serve as acting attorney general, but declined to provide details on when exactly that conversation occurred or whether Whitaker was specifically contemplated. The official would only confirm this written memo is consistent with that oral advice. So again, this is a kind of a watchdog agency for the Department of Justice, drawing the conclusion that the appointment of Matthew Whitaker is constitutional. I'm sure it's just a matter of time. One, two, three. You'll hear the squealing of Democrats out there complaining about this. If you don't believe me, check out the social media and the left-wing cable news sites. They will kick into this, I'm sure, very soon. I want to get back to this commission report, the National Defense Strategy Commission, which is warning about our falling behind and the vulnerability we could have to the Russians and the Chinese. I want to put some meat on the bones here. You know, it's one thing to talk about comparisons. Well, let's talk about what is probably going to be most disturbing in this report. Here are direct quotes. The U.S. military could suffer unacceptably high casualties and loss of major capital assets in its next conflict. It might struggle to win or perhaps lose a war against China or Russia. Boy, that doesn't sound too good, does it? The U.S. is particularly at risk of being overwhelmed should its military be forced to fight on two or more fronts simultaneously. And I would just add here parenthetically, this is the product of years of neglect. Years. This didn't happen overnight. And it certainly is not something that you can point to this administration and say, okay, we caught you. You're underprepared. No. This is something that has been building for years. And the question is, are we going to have the leadership necessary to bring this situation under control? Well, what about recommendations? What do we need to do as a country? In this list of 32 recommendations, the commission urged the Pentagon to explain more clearly how it intends to defeat major power rivals in competition and war. It assailed the strategy for relying at times on questionable assumptions and weak analysis and leaving unanswered critical questions. So I want to ask you, how concerned are you about this conclusion from this commission? Are you concerned about Russia and China? Do you think we, as in our political leaders, are showing the appropriate urgency about this issue? It kind of goes to the point that I've raised a number of times in our discussion about the EMP threat. There seems to be no serious urgency expressed from the political class on this. They don't seem to care. But we're focused on so many other things that have a lesser priority. I would love to get your thoughts. You're welcome to call or text to weigh in on this. First perspective here from Mary. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Vince. Love your show. My comments would be that we're already behind China and Russia. They both have a hypersonic missile already developed. We do not. China has, without challenge, developed these islands in the South China Sea where they're basically going to control all the shipping lanes into Southeast Asia, and that'll drastically curtail our trade with those nations if China chooses, which at some point they will. Russia is going to challenge us in Eastern Europe and in the Mediterranean areas. They've already challenged us successfully on their part in Syria, And our military is just too overextended. We're in something like 150 nations. We have fewer planes, fewer ships. We're still dealing with $700 hammers and $800 nails in the Pentagon. And I think in the future we're going to have to manage the decline, which is a terribly sad thing, but we're going to decline economically as these other nations rise militarily, and we cannot stop their adventurousness.
Now, I want to make sure I'm understanding you correctly, but it sounds very like you have concluded we're on the decline and there's no way to stop this.
Oh, that is correct. I do not believe it can be turned around.
Why
the bureaucracy's too big.
Why is that?
Well, economically, we're bankrupt, Vince. You know that we officially have a $21 trillion debt, but if you include all the things that are unfunded and liabilities, the real debt
we're broke.
Is way over $100 trillion. And
right.
You know, at some point, the Congress is going to have to choose between paying out Social Security and Medicare payments and funding the military. Meanwhile, the biggest line item in the budget will be interest
on the debt.
Ballooning federal debt.
You know what's ironic about this, Mary? This thought just now hit me. Do you know one of the major reasons the Soviet Union collapsed? We helped to drive them into bankruptcy financially by our military buildup.
Right.
And would it not be ironic if we end up economically dooming ourselves, and for the most part, it's because of these social programs?
It's already a fait accompli. I mean, that same thing happened to Rome, the same thing happened to France right after the French Revolution. They had hyperinflation because Louis had overextended the armies, and every time a nation overextends its armies, its funding and funding and funding that Defense Department, you know, the spending gets out of control, and then they print money, and, you know...
It's all downhill from there. Mary, great talking with you. He sounds kind of pessimistic. Well, at the top of the broadcast today, we told you about some crazy weather conditions. We've got a concern about flooding, possibility some freezing rain, winter-type conditions in some parts of the area. So we thought we'd bring on an expert to sort out all of the craziness that will be taking place over the next 24, 48 hours or so. We have back with us Richard Llewellyn, meteorologist with the Weather Channel. Good morning. Welcome back, sir.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Doing pretty well, pretty well. I want to jump in and talk about first the immediate Charlotte area. Is it mostly the concern about flash flooding that we have to be concerned about here?
Yeah, it looks like that's going to be the case. It looks like over the next 12 to 18 hours or so, we've got quite a bit of moisture that's going to work on up through portions of the upstate of South Carolina on through the Piedmont, and that's going to continue to bring the possibility of 1 to 2 inches of rain, and we could see some flooding in spots, but looks like that's going to be the main concern for the 85 corridor and for Charlotte itself, as we'll just be dealing with a cold rain that's going to fall here and some gusty winds. And, of course, temperatures tonight are going to fall into the mid-30s. We'll be right there at that threshold here in Charlotte and in Greenville. But once you start moving up in elevation, that's when things are going to start to get a little bit more interesting.
Well, let's talk about some of these more interesting possibilities, because I've seen talk about the possibility of freezing rain, even in the upstate of South Carolina, as well as western North Carolina. Is that what we're looking at here?
Yeah, it looks like once you start climbing an elevation above 2,000 feet, between 2,000 and 2,500 feet in the Greenville Mountains of the upstate of South Carolina, you're going to start to see that sleet and freezing rain, which could easily add up to a quarter of an inch of accumulation with the sleet, and then about a tenth of an inch of freezing rain on top of that. So that's going to be the concern there. But the real problems are going to start to be once you climb up into the mountains of western North Carolina above 2,500 feet, where we could see sleet accumulate up to an inch, and then ice on top of that up to a quarter of an inch, and that could bring down tree limbs and power lines and cause all types of travel problems in the western part of the state as we make our way through the night tonight and into the first part of the day tomorrow. And with temperatures expected to stay pretty chilly tomorrow in the western Carolinas, this could actually linger on into the day on Friday, where we'll still be dealing with some travel concerns early Friday morning in the upstate and western North Carolina as a result.
All right. So to make sure everybody understands this on the same page, flash flooding concern, especially for the Charlotte area. Also, the kind of moving on in intensity, possibility of some freezing rain in the upstate. The worst of this, western North Carolina.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It looks like that's where the worst of the weather will be, especially once you get above 2,500 feet in elevation. Travelers along I-26 from Greenville up to Asheville, it's going to be a treacherous drive later tonight and into the day tomorrow as the winter storm starts to crank up.
All right, here we are starting early in the middle of November. It's kind of crazy. Richard Llewellyn, thanks a lot for joining us on the broadcast this morning.
Thank you.
And we've been having a conversation this morning about our military as to what we need to do about it to bring it to a place where we're able to at least have some reasonable standing against our biggest foes, the Chinese and the Russians. I want to get back to that in just a minute. So those of you who are hanging on the phone to talk about this, hang on just for a little bit, because I want to tell you about a couple of developing news stories that are just coming in. One of them, the leadership elections in the U.S. Senate. Now, this goes into effect for next year, 2019. We have a couple of very important stories there. First off, Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer have been reelected by voice vote to lead their parties. Does this bother you, by the way, these voice votes? Because honestly, I want to find out who voted for this moron. It's awful of me to say that, isn't it? But isn't it time we have some new leadership? Mitch McConnell's been around a long time. And I knew they were going to do this. I mean, this is not a group of people who are really open to change. This is about old people holding on to power. It's not about the best leadership possible. Now, I've praised Mitch McConnell for what he's doing as far as getting these judges through. Did a great job, for the most part, getting the Supreme Court nominees through. That's great. But overall, it's downright pathetic. It really is. To say I'm disappointed, that's really not accurate, because I didn't have any expectations to begin with. Let me tell you about another important development. This just a few minutes ago. There are members of the House, Democrats, who are opposed to Nancy Pelosi, who are now warning she will not have the votes for Speaker. That's kind of interesting, isn't it? Now, I've got to warn you, if they wise up here and find somebody younger, someone more charismatic, someone less toxic than Nancy Pelosi, look out. Because I think that's the smartest thing they could do. To put her in that position again would be one of the dumbest things. Just like I said the same thing about Republicans and Mitch. By the way, let me remind you, there's a House vote coming up on this very subject. Do you want Kevin McCarthy, with his failing Liberty score, to be the minority leader? I don't. Now's the time you need to tell your member of Congress, we need Jim Jordan for a minority leader. And hold that person accountable, and hopefully they won't do something stupid like have a voice vote. Because I want to know who voted for Kevin McCarthy. Anybody who votes for Kevin McCarthy, I do not want representing me in Congress. Now, sadly, I'm in a district that's gerrymandered Democrat, so we know who this person's likely to vote for. But I thought you should be aware of these developments just this morning. Talking about our military and what we need to do, start first with Craig, who's been patiently waiting a while here. What are your thoughts, Craig?
Hi, Vince. My thoughts are if we were to engage with, more specifically, China than Russia, in the event that they start to get beaten back and lose, they're going to start firing nukes. I mean, and we probably do the same thing. They're not going to wait. I don't think they value their citizens' lives as much as we do ours. I don't think they're concerned about fallout for their neighbors. And if it starts to look like they're losing a war, they're going to play dirty. So even if we do have a dominant military, it's still not going to keep us out of a war with them nuclear if we were to engage in a war with them over such their islands.
Do you think that's where this is headed, that they have goals of supremacy and the conflict is inevitable?
I don't think it's inevitable. I think we just need to realize that they are going to control the South China Sea. And if we're going to try to stop them militarily, it's not going to be worth it. We just need to negotiate a deal to allow our ships to pass through there without any trouble. And with Russia and their hypersonic nukes, I would be really surprised if we don't have stealth hypersonic nuclear cruise missiles ourselves already. I mean, we didn't even know that we had a stealth Black Hawk helicopter until it crashed in Afghanistan.
So hopefully there's some secret things we don't know about that are being prepared to make us better position to deal with these threats. We'll take more calls on this as we continue our broadcast. Back on the Vince Coakley radio program, we've been talking about where we stand militarily, the concern about how we match up against the Chinese and the Russians. Getting your thoughts on that, let's go out to a call from Greenville. And Sean, good morning.
Good morning, Vince. Love your show today.
Hey, thank you.
Well, after studying A People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn and Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins, it's pretty apparent that the U.S. military has done everything that the British Empire has done in the past. So you can debate all day long if they're policing or are they actually stealing natural resources around the world. But basically, the Constitution is extremely strict, no foreign entanglements. Now, if the United States military were to strictly just protect our borders, I think we'd be in fantastic shape. Now, as far as other solutions, there should be no lobbying. I mean, there's been a record of $10 billion been given to the politicians over the last 4 years by special interests, particularly Big Pharma and Big Agra. So that would take care of a lot of problems right there. Basically, people should, you should have private corporations and volunteers, should be educating our children and securing our people.
So I'm kind of curious where you stand in terms of pessimism, optimism. Where do you fall on this particular spectrum?
Well, very optimistic. I'm a chiropractor, and I study trends around the world with health. And I know that as people eat healthier and get healthier, get off of drugs, eat more fruits and vegetables, get off of processed foods, that they think clearer. They're not inclined to steal and to kill as much. This is pretty much confirmed. And I see as the world is eating healthier overall, they're getting off of animal products, getting off of junk food, eating more fruits and vegetables, more organic, more people are going to farmers markets. We got to get off of GMO foods, which people are being finally learning how terrible genetically modified foods are. But as the whole world gets healthier, I see that there's going to be less problems overall. But until then, the United States military should have zero foreign entanglements. We don't need to pay the next biggest budget after the military is the school system. And the school system, according to the World Health Organization, a couple other big, even the UN has proved that the children in this country are very poorly educated, kind of like at the bottom of the list for all industrialized nations. And same with our health. So we don't need to have drug companies, bribing our congressmen. We need to have people start eating healthier, getting off of pharmaceutical drugs.
So you think this is a significant factor in us being prepared, us basically being healthier, will allow us to make much better choices and be better positioned to deal with these threats?
Well, yes, and also, again, take the 1,000 military bases that are around the world and imagine all that energy just protecting our borders. working on getting better water. You know, you look at the children in Flint, they have encephalitis up there. It's horrific. All the water in this whole country is horrific. You know, we need to get healthier water. We need to stop spraying chemtrails from the sky.
Oh, boy.
Get on solar and wind.
Well, this sounds quite a vision that you're projecting here, and I appreciate your call, Sean. I'll bet there'll be some reactions to that. So feel free to call or text. By the way, I want to share with you a piece of audio I've shared some time ago. You may be familiar with Nikita Khrushchev, Soviet leader. This is an account from Ezra Taft Benson, the Secretary of Agriculture in the Eisenhower administration. I want you to listen to what he had to say in characterizing his meeting with Nikita Khrushchev. I want you to listen carefully because the threat is not just weapons firing at us. It's much more insidious. Listen.
It may surprise you to learn that I was host to Mr. Khrushchev for a half day when he visited the United States as a state visitor. But according to President Eisenhower, Khrushchev had expressed a desire to learn something of American agriculture. And after seeing Russian agriculture, I can understand why. As we talked face to face, he indicated that my grandchildren would live under communism. After assuring him that I expected to do all in my power to assure that his and all other grandchildren will live under freedom, he arrogantly declared in substance, "You Americans are so gullible. No, you won't accept communism outright. But we'll keep feeding you small doses of socialism until you finally wake up and find you already have communism. We won't have to fight you. We'll so weaken your economy until you fall like overripe fruit into our hands."
What do you think? That again, Ezra Taft Benson, Secretary of Agriculture under Dwight Eisenhower. I think that is pretty intriguing stuff. And don't you find it especially interesting? I first shared this piece of audio before we heard the blatantly socialist Bernie Sanders come out and declare what he is. This Ocasio-Cortez woman, before she was on the scene. And I mean, think about this. Here we are at a place we've got people openly coming out and saying, "I'm a communist." Can you imagine what this would have been like in the 1960s, 1970s? Even you have people coming out and openly declaring they're socialists and communists. And now this is a badge of honor. And you got young people saying, "Oh, that's cool. Socialism. Wonderful." By the way, if we have time, I need to share with you a really good piece by the Wall Street Journal about socialized medicine. You've heard all this crap about Medicare for all. It is one of the biggest scams. Maybe we'll get to that. Stay with us.